Today's show will be on page 9 in the Blue Rock collection, Joshu's Four Gates. Engo's introduction. In the bright mirror on its stand, beauty and ugliness are revealed. With the Bukuyu sword in hand, killing and sparing are brought under control. A handsome fellow disappearing, an ugly one comes. An ugly fellow disappearing, a handsome one comes. Life is found in death, death in life. If you have no eye to penetrate the barrier, no freedom to turn about, you will be lost on the way. Tell me, what is the eye that penetrates the barrier? What is the freedom to turn about? See the following. Main subject. A monk asked Joshu, what is Joshu? Joshu said, the east gate, the west gate, the north gate, the south gate. Setcho's verse. Its intention concealed, the question came. The Diamond King's eye was clear as jewel. There stood the gates, north, south, east, and west. But the heaviest hammer blow could not open them. Today is the first day of our winter session. The first 2 days are unofficial. And we will begin formally on day 3. As you know, in Zen tradition, the classic practice is a 7-day session. In Chinese, this is actually called a Chan 7. And there's not really a Chan 5 or a Chan 3. Sashin really means a 7-day retreat. And so I'm very glad you all are here, and it's a real joy to practice with you. We've all been together for quite a while now. And it's just wonderful to be sitting with you this morning and last night. There aren't many of us here right now, actually it's wonderful. We have the place to ourselves, a small group, practicing together, and everybody was sitting so beautifully this morning. In fact, you know, the sitting was really superb this morning and last night. And I think that's wonderful because in a certain way we're getting everything ready by cleaning up. You know, we're going to mop the floors when we have a decent mop. We don't have one yet, but we'll find one. And we're going to get everything ready in the kitchen. And this morning we got all the bowls ready, and so everything's all ready for people to arrive. And this is really a great way to practice, a really great way to practice. Even if everybody were here, if all 23 or 24 people were here, that spirit is such an appropriate way to practice, isn't it? Such a beautiful, getting everything ready for the arrival of the honored guests, you could say. And so, you know, everything we do during the work periods is preparing for their arrival. This morning in the kitchen, I have been making some food items that we won't eat for a number of days. I got some red beans out, and I'm soaking them now. And we'll probably eat those 3 days from now. That'll be the first dinner when everybody arrives. And there are some other items that need to be prepared. I was thinking that maybe tomorrow, if we have the time, we could do the lasagna a little bit early. So then when everybody's here, it won't be so onerous. We won't have so much to do. So possibly, we'll see how it works out, but possibly we could do the lasagna tomorrow and just store it. We could even put it in the freezer. I'm sure it will be okay. You know, we have other tasks to do. Getting everything ready would be, the kitchen's clean, but it's not very orderly. We should probably get some of the mixing bowls, which are hither and yon, and put them all together with the big strainer, and get all the implements, all the ladles in one place, and just sort of make the kitchen rational. And then when everybody gets here, it'll go smoothly. And this is wonderful somehow, isn't it? Just getting everything ready. Okay. Yesterday, I got here, and Gary was already here, and Jim, and Karen, and unloading the cushions, preparing the Zendo. Jim went out and got some greens for the altar. I had forgotten to get some flowers, and now we have a beautiful, beautiful arrangement made of boughs and branches. It's beautiful, and everything's going to be ready when people arrive tomorrow night. That spirit is really a wonderful way to practice. When I went to the grocery store yesterday, it was exciting. It's exciting. I try to find good food. I look around for some good deals. You know, I was in a vegetable store, a greengrocer's in Plainfield, and they had cantaloupes. A dollar a piece, which is a real bargain. So I got like 6 cantaloupes. And they had a special on rutabagas, which explains all the rutabagas. And they had a special on papaya, of course. So it explains all the papayas. And I love that as Sesshin approaches, I began to start getting ready. I don't always get it all done, but I love that feeling of getting it ready, getting it ready, getting it ready, preparing, preparing. The honored guests are on the way. It's a little bit like a Christmas, my wife is part of a neighborhood association in Plainfield, in our neighborhood in Plainfield. And we live in an area that's near the hospital, and it's an older district. It's actually a historic district. And since we've been there, long, long ago, there's a tradition of a Christmas party. So it revolves around the neighborhood, and it's just a party, like a block party at Christmas. And everybody in the neighborhood comes to somebody's house. So this year, our neighbors, Fidel and Keith, and Barbara and I, volunteered to have our two houses used for this purpose. And I was very busy with the end of the semester. Actually, that's the busiest part of the year for me. But Barbara and Fidel and Keith were working very hard, and they were decorating and getting food items ready for the block party. And pretty much everybody in the neighborhood showed up. There must have been 50 people. But even though it was hard work, my wife really, I could really see her enjoying getting ready for all the neighbors to come. And next year, Dan and Jeannie are going to do it. And they were eager to volunteer because it's just sometimes we don't see our neighbors for a year. And it really creates a nice atmosphere for all the neighbors to get together. New people come, old people who have been living there for 30 years come. And it is that feeling of getting things ready. I guess many people like that about the Christmas season. You know, it's not really about opening the presents. It's really about getting ready, getting everything ready. And this is a beautiful way to practice Zen. Even if everybody were here, if we had all 23 people or 24 people here, if we all practice in this way, see, it would just be a beautiful path. Be a beautiful path, getting ready for the honored guest. There's a way of practicing, which is sort of self-centered, you know. So if you're quite unhappy, you can come to practice looking for a release from your unhappiness, and that's very normal. I myself practiced for many years for that reason. I was just trying to get out of my unhappiness and my stress. But eventually, you know, if you keep practicing, you have a different motive for practice. It's no longer like a personal motive. It's no longer like, what can I get? You know, it's different. It's like, what can I give? Giving, practice of giving. And you could say, well, giving to whom? And that's a question we should, you know, just let hang in the air for a while. Because my wife was giving a present to the people in the neighborhood, and we're giving a little present to all the people who are going to arrive on Tuesday night by getting everything ready and for them. But when we come to practice, we're also giving. Now, the question is, to whom are we giving this gift? And as I say, this is really, in my opinion, the best way to practice. It makes everything different. You know, one way to think about Zen is that it's a personal goal. It's like, my goal is to achieve enlightenment and liberation. I think it's hard to practice that way after a while. Because I don't think that selfish motivations are very powerful motivations. Once we're out of pain, we can just sort of stop in our tracks. It's like, now what? And so I think if you're going to grow on the path, your motive becomes a different kind of motive. I was reading recently about a mathematician. I don't know if you saw this in the paper. But apparently there was this math problem that hasn't been solved for a century. And there was this mathematician, well, I think he might have been at Cornell, I'm not sure, but he solved it. And it was a big achievement in math. And he was interviewed and talked about his, they said, how did you do it? You know, how did you solve this question? How did you answer this question? And he said, well, I've been working on it, you know, for years, years and years. He said, I have spent 8, you know, to like 15 hours on this thing every day for years. And he said, I thought about it when I was running, you know. I thought about it when I was, you know, on my vacation. he said, I would, you know, if I were swimming, I would be thinking. And that's, I think, really a wonderful story on many different levels. First of all, you know, Zen practice is a lot like that. I think this is really the most wonderful path, personally. I think this is really the most wonderful path in the world. And I think a waking up is a very lofty goal. And I do think it's a little bit like doing nuclear physics or mathematics. It requires, you know, extraordinary mental cultivation and extraordinary determination and dedication. And everybody here has certainly shown that, you know. Everybody here has come, you've put aside your lives, you've made personal sacrifices to be here. One person has a new baby and was just mentioning how difficult it was to leave his new son. And it really tugged at my heartstrings, you know, because I've seen this baby, and what a beautiful baby. And it must be, it's hard, I'm sure. You know, I don't have children, but it must be very hard on an occasion like that. And some of you have given up vacation, precious vacation time, or, you know, income, given up income to be here. That takes real dedication. You know, the mathematician had real determination. And he dedicated himself eight hours at least every day on this question. Most of us don't have that kind of discipline. So something like Sesshin is so wonderful because it gives us the chance to do what that mathematician did. It's sort of a, we have a little system here, right? So, you know, I myself write. My job is to teach and to write. And some days I just don't write very with much dedication, I'm embarrassed to say. I fool around a little too much. And I'll go to the library and I'll just get interested in something and I won't produce very much that day. And then something else will come up and it might be a week before I get back to what I'm working on. Now that's sort of my normal mode of operation. But in Sesshin, we're sort of not allowed to work like that. We've created this system which allows us to be more like the mathematician. We just have to be in the groove, dedicated, practicing. And we're getting up at 4:30, we're going to bed at 10:30, and we're doing 8 or 9 hours of meditation, right? Just sitting, that's not counting sutras, and other sorts of things. So that's real, takes real dedication. But when I think of the mathematician, I wonder what he was doing it for. Because, you know, after he got the, he solved this problem, he won the approval of the mathematics community. And there was a story in the newspaper. And he'll probably get some prize, but you know, academic prizes are not like winning the lottery. You know, it could be a substantial chunk of money, but it won't make him rich. You know, it might be $10,000 or $20,000 or something. So you know, he could get a new car. And you think, well, you know, why did he do this 8 to 10 hours a day? You know, for years and years. And it's clearly not to be recognized, or it's not just to be recognized by fellow mathematicians, right? He's gripped by something deeper. And I think that you've come here to this Sesshin because you're gripped by something deeper. It's like a preparing for something. Getting ready. You know, we're getting it all ready for the people who are coming, but we're really getting it all ready for somebody else. Right? For somebody else. And who is that? A monk asked Master Joshu, "What is Joshu?" This was in the period when Joshu was wandering around China. After Master Nanzen died, Joshu was asked to take over the temple, Nanzen's temple, but he didn't do it. Instead, he went out on the road and wandered all over China and met with great Zen masters. And he also met with their students. And he would come and give a guest teisho, so to speak, and people would ask him questions, and his reputation had preceded him. So monks were often trying, and nuns were often trying to test his insight, and also just to puncture his balloon. Human nature being what it is, people wanted to see what was so great about the great Nanzen. I mean, the great Joshu. And so they pitch him questions. Now, if you're an admirer of Joshu, you might be a little surprised that people have sort of a hostile attitude sometimes towards people like Joshu. It's interesting, when the Dalai Lama came here, you know, his talk was like a love fest. Everybody loves the Dalai Lama. But afterward, I actually heard some criticism of the Dalai Lama. Yeah, even from students. The Dalai Lama's simplicity is very profound, really profound. He's a totally unpretentious person. Now, I believe that's because of the way he lives. I think he lives the way Joshua lived. Preparing all the time for the honored guest. The Dalai Lama is really not in it for the Dalai Lama. It's not his goal. And he's involved in this practice of going from place to place and talking about the Dharma and human goodness and so on. And he could work really hard at it. He could strain very hard, but instead his approach is to be totally natural, which is maybe the most liberating thing, right? Is not to try to be lofty or special, but just to be totally unpretentiously human, in like a human goodness put on stage. And interestingly, not everybody is ready to see that. There were I heard some criticisms. I met with some students afterward, and some of these students have been trained to have very complex thinking and a very critical mindset, and they didn't know what to do with the Dalai Lama's simplicity. They didn't want to say he was stupid, right? Because that would have been too rude. But they were unreceptive and somewhat put off, by his simplicity. So it's possible that Joshu encounters that kind of response from people who are waiting for like a divine figure to enter the room, right? They want Joshu to come in and be very mysterious and glowing eyes and very holy. Holy mannerism, right? And instead, he's totally unpretentious. And people maybe have a hard time dealing with him. The main subject, a monk asked Joshu, "What is Joshu? What is Joshu?" So this is a very good question, but maybe it's a little bit hostile. It's kind of saying, who are you? Fine. Who are you? You're the great Joshu. Who are you? Could be, anyway. And Joshu's answer is just beautiful. Joshu said, the east gate, the west gate, the north gate, the south gate. You should know that Joshu's name refers actually to a place, to a town. It's like a Chicago or something like that. So the town had, many Chinese towns had gates at each of the four cardinal points. And so some people interpret this koan as being about a reference to the village. So they try to understand the four points. The first gate represents this, the second gate represents this, the third gate represents this, the fourth gate is enlightenment or something like that. This is mistaking the finger for the moon, perhaps. I think Joshu's point is that whether I'm facing north, east, south, or west, I'm preparing for the honored guest. Always preparing for the honored guest. See? So when we're cleaning, we're preparing for the honored guest. When we're chopping vegetables, we're preparing for the honored guest. When we're sitting, preparing for the honored guest. This is just, I think, the most beautiful way to live. Beautiful. Serving, 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 serving. Cleaning, always preparing for the honored guest. This is just such a beautiful way to live. This is, I think, the proper spirit for Sesshin. If you come to Sesshin looking for results, it's very easy to be disappointed. If you come to Sesshin expecting something to happen, it's, I think, in some ways that's inevitably the case, right? But on the other hand, it's important not to indulge too much in that way of thinking. It would be better to try to have the spirit of Joshu's four gates. The gates are, there's a gate at each point in the city. And Joshu's open gates, right, that opened to receive the honored guest. Yeah? This is just the most beautiful way to practice. Then it's not about me anymore. It's not about results, my answering, my koan. It's like we have bigger fish to fry. We have bigger fish to fry. This is the practice of giving, not the practice of taking. Taking is a practice too, actually. There's a way of taking a gift, of accepting a gift, and having the right spirit. If somebody gives you a gift, it's hard to actually receive the gift in the proper spirit. Because you don't want to hurt their feelings, but you want them to know that the most important thing is your relationship with them and not getting the gift. So you wouldn't want to say, well, what did you get me? Want to say, oh, this is a wonderful gift, whatever it is, I'm sure it'll be wonderful. It's a little tricky. So there's a practice to receiving a gift, but there's a real art to giving a gift. If your practice is give, the practice of Sesshin is mistaken for a practice of receiving, but it's really a practice of giving. This is, I think, so important. And there's always work to be done. I was just reading, I received the Dharma Drum magazine from Shen Yan's community. They put out a print newsletter. It's really a little fancier than that. It's stapled magazine, so it's between a newsletter and a real production. And there are articles by people in the community, in that community. And there was an article by Shen Yan himself. And he's somebody I respect a lot. And so I was interested in reading the article. And he was talking about his life in practice. And somebody asked him about enlightenment. They said, predictably, they asked, people are interested in Zen, they're interested in enlightenment. And they said, what does it mean to get Dai Kensho, and how is that different from receiving Dharma transmission? So this is a question about sort of like worldly matters. Dharma transmission is about transmission of authorization to teach. So if a person has been studying with a teacher for a long time, the teacher might give that person transmission. That means there's authorization to teach. And then there's a transmission also, which is like a little more final commitment of authorization. And a person can have authorization to teach and not have a complete transmission. And a person can have authorization to teach and not have had Dai Kensho, Great Awakening. So people get these matters a little bit confused in their mind. And indeed, there are people who initially practice Zen because they think, oh, it would be wonderful to be the great Zen master and to receive Dharma transmission. In fact, that's a very common motive. Many people meet teachers like Shen Yan or the Dalai Lama, and they admire them so much they want to be their student and want to follow in their footsteps. And this is a motive that is sort of a mixed motive, right? Because naturally it's a good thing to admire people who are exemplary, like the Dalai Lama, but ultimately it doesn't matter if you receive Dharma transmission or not, or any kind of formal transmission or not. I mean, so Shen Yan was asked this question, and he was sorting it all out. And he said, well, when you have had Dai Kensho, your teacher will authenticate the experience. If you've been practicing with the teacher for a long time, you've shared many things, and eventually you have Dai Kensho, and the teacher can recognize your awakening. Called sometimes a transmission of the light, although it's really not light is really not transmitted. So already there. And then there's these formal arrangements of recognizing somebody as a teacher. So he went through this whole thing, and then the interesting thing was he said something like this. He said, of course, as for Dai Kensho, I myself am still not fully awake. Something like that. I myself, I'm speaking for myself, I haven't freed myself from all of my obstacles yet. See? And I just was blown away by that, because that's just a wonderful, wonderful statement. Some people have had a few Kensho experiences, and they think, well, I'm really getting somewhere. And indeed, you will meet people who will say, I've freed myself from all my baggage. There's no baggage. I'm freed. And that, if you say that, that means I'm Buddha. That means I have absolutely no, I have never met such a being. myself, and I myself am not such a being. And Shen Yin is not such a being. And Dai Kensho does not mean you're Buddha. It means that you've seen the source, you've seen an awakened mind, and then that you still have a lot of cleaning up to do, right? A lot of cleaning up to do. So before Dai Kensho and after Dai Kensho are not so different, right? It's like preparing for a guest that you've never met. This is like before Dai Kensho, preparing for the guest you've never met, and cleaning and getting ready and thinking, I wonder what he'll be like. I wonder what she'll be like. How wonderful. See? And then you meet the guest face to face, but you can meet the guest again and again. Right? Again and again, again and again. And it's just as wonderful preparing then. See, just your whole life is spent preparing for the honored guest. Preparing, preparing, preparing. There's always a part of us that doesn't want to prepare. You know, there's always a part of us still that says, oh, I'm slicing the vegetables again, grocery shopping again. You know, we keep going, right? We get the groceries, we cut the vegetables, we mop the floor. And suddenly, you know, there's this great stillness, this beautiful stillness. It's like in our lives, so often we're blocked, you know, or there are so many obstructions in our lives. It seems that every time we try to do something, something's in the way, right? And emotionally, too, we can be so blocked. It takes a long time to work through. If you're involved in a relationship with another person, you know how complicated relationships are. If just it's so hard to communicate your heart to another person, right? If you say I love you, somebody can say I love you, okay, I love you. Say, I love you. Or they can say, in another way. It very quickly gets all tangled up, you think. And then you feel, this person isn't reciprocating for some reason. Have I hurt your feelings? Have I not lived up to my part of the bargain? It quickly becomes very complicated. Or you're at work and you want to do a good job, and somebody asks you to do something. You might stay up all night writing it, and you give it to the person and say, oh, this is not really what I want. Or, you can be trying to accomplish something in your professional life or in your personal life, and just seems like blocked, blocked, blocked. This is life, right? But every once in a while we have this wonderful clearing. It's like you're in a forest and suddenly you come to an open place where the light can come in. And it's just beautiful to be there after going through this dark forest, And I think this is the way Sesshin can feel sometimes, right? All the confusion is... all the confusion somehow disappears. And there's just this movement of our whole being. And it's just like the whole, it's like suddenly the unifying of the whole being. The word sashin means unifying the mind. But really, it's like unifying the whole being. It's like we're pulled in all these different directions and we come to sashin and it's like suddenly everything turns to face the North Gate. All of our being, our mind, our ears, our attention, facing the gate, facing the North Gate, facing the East Gate, facing the South Gate, facing the West Gate. Standing at the gate, waiting, waiting. And it is beautiful to stand at the gate and wait. It might be 1,000 years before the guest arrives, but so calm, so still, and it were so free, right? You're so free in that state. It's like I could wait 1,000,000 years in this state. It's so beautiful. You know, preparing, waiting. This is the essence of seshin, right? It's not even waiting, just preparing, 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 preparing. So how do you prepare for the honored guest? You know, you straighten your back, you breathe with your hara, you focus your mind on your koan. And you know, a first day of seshin, your mind's full of thoughts about this and that, all the things you've left behind, unfinished tasks, bills to be paid, and so on, classes that are going to resume. And it's only natural that these things are still, these obstructions, these concerns are still there. That's okay, because we're preparing. So naturally, there's cleaning to be done, you know. And so breath, breath, breath. And then, you know, next day, fewer obstructions, still preparing, preparing, preparing. And anything can happen, right? Anything can happen. When the gates are open, anything can, whatever comes through the gate will be wonderful. Whoever comes through will be the honored guest. So it's just going to be wonderful. This is what seshin is all about. We prepare enough, you know, we clarify our body, mind, and heart. And then, you know, whatever comes through the gate is Buddha itself. Whoever comes through is going to be a most honored guest. And that goes for the seshin as a whole, and it goes for every minute of the seshin. You know, so if there's noise on the street, that's comes through the gate, that's an honored guest. If pain in our legs, it's the honored guest. Bearing, honored guest. All of these are all of these are the honored guest. So just keep preparing. So wonderful, the practice with you this morning. This beautiful, you know, being by ourselves in this space is just beautiful. It's like everything has disappeared, and here we are, and we're practicing. And honored guests are on their way, and always they're always going to be on their way. We're always going to be preparing. No, I just can't think of any better way to live. It's just so beautiful. Secho's verse. Its intention concealed, the question came. The Diamond King's eye was clear as a jewel. There stood the gates, north, south, east, and west, but the heaviest hammer blow could not open them. See, you can't force the gate to open. You just keep preparing with an open heart, loving heart, and just keep preparing, and the gate opens by itself. So, it's no secret. You all know it already. That's why you're here. That's why sitting this morning was so beautiful.